We're just a few minutes this side of the 10 o'clock hour. It is now the midday show. Welcome to a Thursday. It's going to be an absolutely gorgeous and beautiful Laguna Beach day today. Not as muggy as it was yesterday, but we still got that cool warmth and smell of the ocean in the air, which I dig. I think that's one of my favorite things about living here in town is the smell of the ocean. Another one of my favorite things about living in town is the Sawdust Art Festival and the amazing talent that you find there. Hey, it could be your neighbor. You don't know how talented your neighbor might be. Candace, and I hope I'm pronouncing this right, Brokenshear. Is Brokenshear
perfect,
correct?
Perfect.
Right on. I got Candace Brokenshear and Isaac Anderson with us this morning, mixed media artist and a textile artist. Candace works with wool and fiber art. And my understanding is that you harvest your wool and textiles humanely from all the living creatures on Earth, right?
Yeah, I work with a bunch of farmers across the country, and I pre-order all the wool just as they're about to be sheared. And sheep live to like they're 14 as well. So if there's a particular fleece that I love, I can go back year after year after year and just keep getting the wool from the same sheep. From the same sheep. So a lot of my work will have the name of the sheep on it.
Oh, I love that. That's even better. My God. Again, yes, and Isaac has been sitting next to her here, and just in our 2 or 3 minutes of prep, he's learning more about her in these 2 or 3 minutes than I guess you've ever known.
I know. Candace is fascinating. A documentary is in the works.
You're not so bad yourself. Your father was a glass blower and an archery guy. How do you say archer?
Archer.
An archer. Okay.
Yeah.
Like the cartoon.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. And how was that your draw into art?
That's no pun intended. Drawing the bow. Yeah. No. Yeah. Probably so. He was very artsy and amazing with his hands. My mom too was into photography and very creative and witty, and so it was a good combo. And then the glass blowing background too was always intriguing.
Right. And your mom gifted you, I guess, your grandfather's 35 millimeter camera.
Yes.
Okay. Tell us about that camera.
I was on a flight to school in Candace's country origin. And
I noticed an accent. I thought you were from Texas.
Of course. No, I am a London girl.
But no, just kind of memorized the owner's manual on my flight, like 9-hour flight, probably read it 3 or 4 times. And that was kind of my intro to photography, and had probably 50 rolls of 35 millimeter film in my bag, and shot probably close to every roll on that kind of 6 month or well, probably longer, 8 month schooling in England. And kind of photography, the love and passion of photography was birthed on that trip.
What do you look for when you want to shoot, when you snap an image? What do you look for?
What do I look for now versus then? Maybe, you know, I think I'm always looking for a story, something that's interesting. It doesn't always have to be the most beautiful lighting or the most beautiful sunset or, you know, whatever. I think sometimes it's just more an interesting story.
Okay. All right. And you find that mostly in creatures or people or just settings?
I think it's both. I mean, people are quite compelling. I mean, I think one of my favorite pictures actually was we were traveling in Eastern Europe. And there was this man standing on an old television set, just using it as a step stool. The screen had been long gone for probably a few decades,
right?
But it was just his step stool.
Right.
And that alone was just, you know, he's like angle grinding a metal fence. But, you know, just that little story too, was just a beautiful story. And traveling, doing some work in Kosovo, a lot of photography and videography there too. And just compelled by the textures, the buildings that have been kind of blown up. And
Right. Beautifully described, by the way. You've painted a perfect image in my head of the guy on the TV, man. I swear, that was beautifully described. And Candace, as I mentioned just a couple of seconds ago off air, you graduated with a psychology degree.
I did, but that was so long ago. Yeah, I think I'm sort of a frustrated actress at the time, maybe. I don't know. I worked in theatre. I worked in all sort of aspects of theatre, and then at some point, I had to go do something.
Right. So. And did you think that maybe a psychology background would help you in theatre? Did you think that one would help the other?
No. Okay. I think it was all about getting a grant at the time.
Okay. And where did art fit in?
So art is always, it's really interesting. I think this is the reason why Isaac and I are sort of, we have similar sort of stories in regard to, narrative comes first in everything we do. So all my work, I'm always thinking about a story behind it. Yeah, it's wool. And yeah, the material is telling me to do something specific with it quite often. Right. But yeah, it always is embedded in story. And the pieces that Isaac and I are working on together, there's a very, very strong sort of narrative behind that.
Right. And tell us about moving into a career of experimental design.
Wow. That is, that's quite a story.
Yeah, it is.
Yes. So, it's experimental and experiential.
Okay, yeah.
So what it is, it's about trying to figure out how you want an audience to feel. You know, what's the outcome? And then working backwards from that. So what do you want their experience to be?
Right.
And then what are all the facets that need to be, what are the ingredients that you need to put into that?
Right.
So I do a lot of that work, sort of writing experiential narratives.
Right. You very much have taken your performance background, and it is really your art. It is the way you express yourself now in a different medium, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Right. Because it aligns so well with so many different mediums as right. well. You know, if story's at the root, you can kind of do anything right. at that point. Right. Yeah.
And go ahead. No, I'm sorry.
Well, I was just wondering if she has any, like, Macbeth lines memorized or something that she
oh,
could...
Oh, stop. No.
Nothing?
No.
Come on. No. You do.
That's
some
a former
lines.
Life. Let's see. She does protest too much.
Oh, there we go.
Stop.
Isaac, any performance in your past?
A little bit, yeah.
What would you do?
I was Harvey. In the play Harvey, I was Elwood P. Dowd.
Okay.
My senior year of high school.
And for those of you that don't know, he saw a fictitious rabbit in his life. And,
yeah, well done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dowd's the name, Elwood P.
Look at him.
Yeah.
No, you got
Let
skills
me give you
there.
One of my cards. No, it was all downhill from there, but that was...
All right. In 2004, you started experimenting with gypsum plaster, right? What'd you start doing with that?
Just using it as kind of a backdrop for the photography.
Right.
So it was kind of, like I said before, the photography and the storytelling was kind of the passion. And then I think there were some images that were, especially like if you're in Kosovo and you're in some village that's been bombed out or something and you capture some father's face or this expression, it's not necessarily a picture that somebody could handle looking at every day on their wall, but maybe they could if it was, you know, placed in context within this little plaster panel. And so that's what I would do is usually scale the picture down, and then the plaster work would kind of be a broader, context, I guess, for the photo.
Right. As you walk through life and you see images that would be great and captured into single shot images, do you consider that as part of a reel for documentary filmmaking? Because you're into that as well.
Probably, yeah. Right. I think my brain is always thinking in terms of story and documentary, and sometimes I have to stop my brain from doing that. It used to be worse in terms of everything was a film idea, and I think now it's maybe 30% better.
I would indulge your filmmaking and your documentarianism. I think, is that even a word?
Yeah.
I'm looking over at the psychologist. I'm looking at the psychologist now. What does that mean when I say that?
What does he mean by that? Really?
for a lot of years, you worked in Detroit with Clay Underfoot in an automaker's advanced design program.
Oh, yeah. That was part of sort of the experiential design. So I got moved to Detroit. Actually, it was a funny story. I was working in Berlin, and I was asked to go visit Detroit for a period of time,
right.
But I never left. It's like they forgot me. They left me there. but yeah, I worked in the concept studio for Ford with all the concept designers there, sort of coming up with a team of people, the stories
right.
that are, you know, that you tell about the concept cars at auto shows. And then I went around the world with the auto shows. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, it was very cool.
So let's talk about the same sheep thing, because that stuck in my head when you mentioned that you could actually harvest wool from the same sheep year after year after year.
Yeah.
As that sheep gets older, does the wool change? Do you notice a difference in the wool?
That's such a good question.
Wow.
Yes, it does. Yeah, no, absolutely it does. Because if it's a ewe, so a female sheep that has just been lambing,
right.
yeah, her wool is very, very different. Now, for me, because I do a lot of felting,
right.
Which is sort of an entanglement of wool, that doesn't matter so much. But if you're spinning, it means it breaks quite a lot.
Hmm.
So yeah, so there's different markets for things. And then obviously sheep are out in the sun. Right. So they get sort of like sun tips. Right. And I do a lot of dyeing. So I have my own dye garden at home. So I plant lots and lots of flowers that make color. Okay. We have one at Sawdust as well, actually. A little educational dye garden there as well.
Oh.
So different wool accepts dye in different ways as well. So, yeah.
And can you ruin wool with the dye and there's no way to get it back out? Is there a...
It's not so much of ruining. No. I mean, again, dyeing with natural materials is always a grand experiment. But no, it's always usable. It's always usable. Yeah, I mean, it's the TVC. I've got blue hands today.
I noticed.
I was dyeing wool, one of my favorite fleeces yesterday, with indigo leaves.
Okay.
So you just take the leaves and start massaging it into the wool, and after about 20 minutes, the wool starts going blue.
Okay, as do your hands.
Mm. As do my hands. My hands will be blue now for like 10 days or so. Mm, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
My.
Yeah.
Wow.
And you, aside from photography and all the other stuff you do, there's also sculpture in your life, right?
It kind of comes along with working with the plaster. Right? So yeah, you've got the wall art, which is three-dimensional. It's not necessary. It's not like a relief or something, but it is three-dimensional. But then yeah, it kind of lends itself to, you have extra material and suddenly you've got somebody looking back at you, you know, as you're sculpting it into different things. Yeah, so my studio's got a number of sculptures. The sawdust, I only have maybe one there right now. But
So when you see something that is not three dimensional, do you, in your mind, can it be three dimensional? Do you find yourself going, well, you know what, I can.
In terms of like an image of what?
Just a flat image of a picture of a bird. Oh. And then you say, you know what? I can three-dimensionalize this.
I guess I could.
I'm trying to figure out how. I'm trying to be the psychologist here and figure out how that mind works.
What's wrong with me? No, I appreciate that. Did my wife send you?
I've got notes.
No, I mean, because I'm not doing it all the time, too, like a true sculptor that's just, you know, constantly working with clay or whatever the material is. I mean, I think if you saw me sit down and try to sculpt a bird, I mean, it's not going to be some perfect representation of the bird, but I think it might be more of a my representation of it, you know. Right. I think my background when I was younger was more like photorealism with drawing and charcoal and things, so that's still kind of in me.
Right.
And so it's kind of a funny thing as you're trying to escape from that and kind of come up with your own voice and kind of translation maybe of what you're seeing, instead of, you know, we don't need photorealism, we have cameras and we can print, you know, so I don't necessarily need to.
Which was the basis for the question, so thank you.
Yeah, that
was beautifully stated. You mentioned Kosovo, and I would imagine that the images that you are describing from Kosovo were from the 90s, and when there was a lot of turmoil, and they weren't having a good time in Kosovo.
They were not having a good time.
Was your art darker then? Did that bring forth a darkness to it?
No, but I think it kind of birthed maybe a direction with the art. I was still in college. My roommate and I actually left school for a few weeks and did some video and photography work with a relief organization probably a few months after the war in 99. Mm-hmm. And that was, especially at that age, you know, I mean, that's a major kind of transition in life when suddenly you're in a place that's just literally just been bombed out. There's still tanks all over the place and huge, you know, NATO presence and UN presence. So I think that was, you kind of realized you're not in Kansas anymore.
Right.
So yeah, I think it did impact the art, but not really in a morbid way. I think it was more, you still see the celebration of life and see, like, there's a couple sisters I'm interviewing and they just, I mean, their story was so sad and, you know, just this haunting story, but there was still somehow this beauty and, you know, they survived and their little sister survived, even though their parents were lost during the war. And there's still just this fight for life and hunger for justice in a good way, you know. So there's still some beauty even in the midst of the ashes. And I think that kind of prevailed, you know, hopefully in the art too. Right. I don't want to focus just on the darkness, but.
Right. And can you find beauty in, for instance, what's happening in Ukraine right now? I know there are stories to tell, and I know that there has to be a story. Do you have a narrative that you're already working on?
I mean, I think it does impact the art. I think it brings back a lot of what I experienced, you know, over 20 years ago, I guess, too. Right. And so, you know, I would say certainly there's going to be some amazing stories of, you know, heroism and things that come out from this, you know, tragedy. But it's, we had a gal at the Sawdust a couple weeks ago. She's a photographer, right, and, you know, is trying to get some photo gigs here. And she's from the Ukraine, living in Laguna. And, you know, her husband's still there fighting. He's fighting age, so he can't leave. And so she's just trying to make ends meet here with her son. And, yeah, but it's like even talking to her, though, there's still this sense of hope. She's not in despair. She's trying to, it wasn't woe is me. It's like, hey, here's my skill. I've got a trade, and I want to do it. And she was proud of herself. And so I really admire their tenacity. And, I mean, they're fighters, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
They could have bowed down.
Right,
and
right.
And they're not. So I think we can really learn from that. And in terms of, there are tyrants out there.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's tyrants in our country. There's tyrants everywhere. Right. And we do have to just stand up and fight for truth in a righteous way. And I think that's what I'm seeing people
right.
do.
So I really love your hopefulness. And I love that. That's, you're right up my wheelhouse there. You're right up my wheelhouse there. Candace, so you tell us, obviously born in London, but now you have a studio here in Laguna Beach. The culture shock, the change that happened to you when you first decided, well, okay, this is going to be my home now.
Well, what's not to love about here?
Yeah, really.
I mean, it's just fantastic. It was really interesting, actually, because I moved to Detroit at the end of the 90s. And because I was in automotive and there were automotive companies out here, I used to travel here all the time.
Okay. So you already had a kind of a feel for it.
Absolutely. And I remember waiting for a flight one night. This was way back when there used to be these little shuttle services between Orange County and LAX. So I used to fly out of LAX, but used to have to hang around a lot around, you know, around MacArthur.
Right.
And I remember one night just sort of, I think I was at Fashion Island back in the day, going, I will live here one day. This will happen, I am sure. So yeah, I'm pretty sure I manifested it.
All right. And this summer at the Sawdust, is there a chance of doing a combination of work with
the
two of you? So tell us what you're working on.
Yeah, absolutely. So a client of mine had bought a house in Huntington Harbor.
Okay.
Absolutely gorgeous. And commissioned some work. And then when I went to actually look at the house and where we thought we were going to put the piece, it sort of shifted from this very lovely sort of corner where we were going to put all this incredible wool work to a much larger piece. And I thought, oh, yeah, that's too much wool. But mm-hmm. I know somebody that I could collaborate with.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so Isaac and I are now coming up with this amazing installation that is just so cool because of everything that Isaac does in regard to the cement and the plaster and the pigments, you know, sort of the hard surfaces, the shiny surfaces, and
right.
me being able to sort of wrap them with these very, very sort of organic materials or sort of do insertions, you know, with these like amazing, gorgeous colored sheep locks coming out of them. It might sound a bit crazy, but it actually sort of makes sense,
right.
you know, having that juxtaposition. So, right. yeah,
we're
really excited.
That's fascinating. I want to see it. I absolutely want to see it. When she first described this project to you, was it you have to see the place before you can...
That was part of it. Yeah, for sure. It was, actually. And so when we went, it is just an amazing, unique setting. And then when you see the walls that she's talking about, too, they're really just perfect for this piece. And it's almost like an kind of becomes like an archway and in terms of the way the two pieces or two sides of this piece will meet. And then, yeah, seeing the interaction, the inorganic versus the organic. So I'm using the inorganic materials and a lot of times usually fiber reinforced, but now the fiber is actually coming out of the crags and is that a British word? Crags?
Crags and crannies.
Crags and crannies.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is. And again, because we both have this storied sort of background, it has a narrative to it as well. I mean, we started doing research about what this installation should be. I started researching things about the equinox. We started getting deeper into that. And there's actually a really lovely story now, even though it sort of represents the sunset through night and daybreak, the piece still is very much embedded in this idea of equality.
Even though the two of you get along so well, obviously, and you're both immensely talented, is it tough to creatively work with another artist?
Ask us in a few months.
Exactly.
she's more organized.
I was just about to say that.
We're both very, very detail-oriented, but she's more timely and organized, so I think...
Right. It works.
Right. She was the teacher's pet.
Teacher's pet.
Really, really
no.
So where do we find you at the Sawdust?
I am in, we're now called the studios, don't we? I feel like we've been upgraded. If you read the brochure, we actually have studio numbers now. So I'm in studio 507.
Oh, interesting. I didn't even realize
that.
Oh,
studio.
I'm 303. So if you actually, you can hit both of us. If you head up towards glass blowing, there's the two aisles. If you kind of head to the right up that main aisle towards glass blowing, I'm up there on the left, big concrete monolithic booth. And then if you continue up a little further, there's Candace with the greatest little nook ever in Asada's boots. You really have to see it.
Is nook also a British word?
Yeah. It's not English. It's actually a British word.
I learned last year I was in the same spot and it was so sunny. So this year I sort of created a she shed.
Mm.
Yes.
Okay.
With seating.
It's cozy.
Yes, it is. It's very cozy.
Very, very cool. We'll look for you at Sawdust. This coming Sunday, by the way, is the Benevolence Fund auction.
Yes.
Anything from either of you going to be a part of this auction that we might be able to bid on?
I'm being Vanna White.
Oh, I love that.
Yes, so okay. I will be very much part of that auction, encouraging everyone to buy. Absolutely. Yeah, I was Vanna White last year.
I'm doing it again. Well, now, see, I'm the one that needs... Thank you for the reminder.
I will be coming to your booth, and I will be grabbing some art pressure's from on you.
I have a couple pieces in my bag here, so...
Okay.
Oh, you guys are great. This has been an enjoyable conversation, I swear. I'm so glad I met you guys, and we'll look forward to seeing you this weekend. Sawdust is taking place through August 28th. Candace Brokenshire and Isaac Anderson, thank you both for being here today.
Thank you so much.
All right. A delightful conversation. It's the Mornings with Ed show. Actually, it's the Midday show now. 10:28 the time.